You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Six months, 82 games, and finally, the postseason is here. First up, the SoFi NBA Play-In Tournament. For this, the rules are simple. Win to get in. Eight teams battle to earn their playoff spot in a win-or-go-home style tournament that is bound to be full of highlights, excitement, and drama. There's no better way to set the tone for the playoffs than this, so make sure you don't miss the action. Watch TNT's coverage of the SoFi NBA Play-In Tournament on April 16th and 19th on TNT, True TV, and Max.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Big Suey, presented by DraftKings.
Why are you listening to this show?
The podcast that seems very similar to the other Dan Le Batard podcast.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to apologize for that.
In fact, the only difference seems to be this imaging.
I have been tempted in restaurants just walking past tables to grab somebody's fries that if they're just there. That hasn't happened to you guys?
I've done it.
And now, here's the marching man to nowhere, Fat Face, and the habitual liar.
A little hockey sneaking in at the end of the local hour.
Love it.
Did you guys get enough UM football Hall of Fame?
No, what I really wanted to do was talk UM baseball.
Oh my God. What a disastrous postseason. It started in the ACC tournament. They took a shit, a double shit. And then they can't win a home regional? Wow.
What is a double shit?
Two shits.
They lost two straight games in the ACC regional by a score of 25-9.
Are you getting up and wiping in between, or is this your stay seated and you shit twice?
Well, that's why the second one's worse than the first. Because
Mike, get in here.
Double
then.
Shit.
Crack yeah. rot.
Give Gino Demari what you got. Crack rot?
Yeah. That's a rock. Well-known that's expression.
That's what my dad calls. You know that when you're at like a theme park all day and your thighs start rubbing?
Right.
That's what my dad calls that.
Most people call it swamp ass.
Mm-hmm.
I invented crack rot. Okay, that's my phrase.
My dad will be walking out of Disney World and just saying out loud, I got crack rot, and like walking weird.
And they all know what it means.
Yeah.
Believe me.
Need that gold bond.
And you get back to the hotel room, go and sit down on the Ring of Honor, do your thing.
Why wouldn't that have you to do with shower? Why wouldn't you just...
Well, you sit on the Ring of Honor and then you go in the shower.
Yeah, but exactly.
What, am I going to shit in the shower?
What does this have
while
to do
having a shower?
What does this have to do with shitting?
What does this have to do with...
It's a great...
We're chafing.
What does this
it's
have to do with...
It's chafing and shitting. It's a combination.
You're the weirdest person
you
ever.
You shart, it equals crack rot.
Mm-hmm.
What are you talking about?
I don't mean
like,
to be too rude for youthful listeners.
You?
It is a
how
disgusting conversation.
Wait a minute,
Dad,
what
just
are you
combined
doing?
Two gross
no,
things.
He's defined crack rot differently than you have all your life. You think of it as a swampy
no, he's
region.
Just, he's just
throwing
not,
some poop in there as well.
He's just not thinking right now. Dad, you're like combining having to poop and getting that sweaty, sticky feeling underneath your legs where you have to take a shower.
Crack
that
rot, it begins with chafing.
Oh. Yes.
The inner thighs chafe.
This is the worst conversation.
Becomes
we've ever
had. Very uncomfortable to walk, particularly in a theme park.
Right. Yeah. So what does that have to do with taking a shit?
One he's just saying when he gets home from the park after experiencing
Thank
all that,
you.
He likes to sit on the throne. That's
Thank you.
All.
That's Maybe right.
Leave the man alone.
The Ring of Honor.
Mm-hmm.
Your father's disgusting is the larger point, and he didn't know any of this was being aired.
I'm just more honest than the rest of us.
About crack rot.
Yeah. He's the same man on air as he is off air, Dan.
Thanks, Billy.
Yeah.
I appreciate that because that's what I strive for.
Mm-hmm.
This is the real me, on and off the air.
Crack rot.
Yeah.
That's what you get.
Well, yes. It's chafing. It's sweating in the nethers. and it chafes, and it, you know, the inner thighs rub against each other.
You're not going to get a more passionate take about Miami baseball than what you just got.
Thank you. Yeah. And then they're blessed with a home regional, overranked at number six national, and they have to come back to beat, is it Canisius? How does that?
Yeah,
Canisius.
Canisius. And yeah. then they lose two in a row at home. You just can't do it. I'm sorry. They had a pretty good regular season. I think they were ranked as high as two or three for a couple of weeks.
President's Cup, yeah.
Great. Mike Ryan thought they could win the championship. Well, no, they fell apart at the end of the season.
Yeah, by the end of the season, the writing was kind of on the wall. But that was a 40-win season. I thought they'd get out of the regional. Granted, Ole Miss and Arizona were very good teams. They got
and you thought they would show up in the ACCs better than they did, I assume.
Yeah, I mean, they got their asses kicked by NC State, which probably should have made the tournament. Dan, I'm not going to do the thing that everyone expects me to do, which is pretend I'm a college baseball expert after just paying attention to it for one weekend.
Nor am I.
I'm not going to do that.
But when you look at their postseason, it's just, it's bad.
They had one really good month, a spectacular month, where they were easily the second best team in the nation, ranked as such. No one's catching Tennessee, which appears to be a juggernaut this season.
Ryan bet Tennessee minus 8.5 runs.
Yeah. No, I'm betting
all
sorts
of
college
baseball. Betting college baseball?
I know a guy.
Yeah.
I know a guy.
Well, who do you know? I mean,
I know a guy.
You can't say the guy's name. I understand. But you know a guy for college baseball?
Yeah, everybody has a
really?
Guy. I got a CFL guy that's kicking up. Got a CFL. Very excited about the CFL season starting this week. And I'm on the Blue Bombers of Winnipeg. So
wow. How about that?
You're going to want to lock in minus 9.5.
Grey Cup at stake.
But, you know, I wanted to get into it. I really wanted
for the
to go.
The season
to,
or the game, the first week? Is that a season total?
No. Minus 9.5, first game.
All right. Yeah, I'm on Friday. It. Yeah.
Is Doug Flutie
still
playing?
Why aren't you doing a gambling pod?
What, you want it to be good? Because, man, Jordan Poole, you killed me. Hey, either way, I wanted to really feel passionate about college baseball, because what college baseball has that pro baseball doesn't, for me, is an emotional connection. I know those uniform colors. I've seen that team be successful. I've had great memories there. I love the games there. I like the shake. I like the Metro Rail buzzing by every now and then. I like Freestyle's Don't Stop the Rock. I think it's a great atmosphere, family-friendly, and I love going to games at Mark Light Stadium.
Yeah, and let's not forget the dulcet tones of Jay Rokich. Yeah.
No, that was... No.
How was that shake? Did you have the chicken wing shake? Because we talked about it yesterday, and we were mixed reviews on it.
I had. Why? Who else had it?
We were mixed reviews on what we thought it might be.
I had the hottie toddy. I had the apple pie. I had the Arizona-themed one, which was a margarita mix. And I also had the Canisius. The Canisius one, first couple of sips, not bad. It was ranch, buffalo wing sauce, celery, and carrots. There was no chicken wing in my shake. I think that was just for the promotional photo.
You just get the ranch and stuff in the ice cream?
First couple of sips, I'm like, hey, that's not bad. And it's a million degrees out, so like after 5 minutes, you're having this ranch ice cream soup, and you're like, I'm good to halfway. Pass me the hottie toddy.
What's wrong with J-Ro? You don't like J-Ro, Dan?
Yeah, really.
It's just dulcet is not the tones. They're tones that I would associate with J-Ro Keech.
Right.
Dulcet, I thought, is what I don't think it's on. I'm sorry to blaspheme against the stadium announcer for our local times. I know that J-Ro Keech, didn't he have some scandal where he ended up back?
I don't want to go there. He's got dulcet tones. Mike needs to work up a J-Ro Keech imitation, because if you can do
I have a limited fake J-Ro
Keech. Here we go.
Excellent. I think if you want to call fake Howard, does he have a great J-Ro Keech impersonation? But please.
Why would I want to call fake Howard?
Because we're doing fakes, Mike.
You got a ticket, traffic ticket.
I would love to have a J-Ro Keech off and break off. I want to break off.
It's a great question by Mike.
I want to see Whittingham. Whittingham is talking about honoring a voice that represents blossoming sports fandom, broadcasting. Whitty, were you like me the first time you were on that baseball stadium field? You like felt a sense of history there.
Yeah, I mean, that program is massive. It's a huge part of the community. It's one of the things that was most enriching about my experience at the University of Miami was because when I was told, hey, you get to do some baseball games, like, okay, that sounds fun. But then you actually learn what that program means, not just to the University of Miami, but to the Coral Gables community.
Yeah, no,
that program
cares,
is so. Of the community in a way that no other sports sports program in this city is.
What are we talking about?
No one cares.
Utter bullshit.
If I go walk around Coral Gables and say, hey, top five things about this community, no one is saying college baseball.
University of Miami baseball.
I know.
Yeah. Come on, man.
Woody's
right.
Spot.
Yeah,
Woody's
right.
No idea what you're talking about. It's a special
of a community.
Yeah.
It is. When I worked for the student radio station, our website went down because so many people were trying to listen to a UM baseball game.
It's charming. It's nostalgic. It is. That place feels like it's from the 1950s.
It does. It's Wrigley. It's a little corner of the campus. It's a little Wrigley Field. It's a beautiful atmosphere.
It is the best college-type atmosphere because they play at Hard Rock Stadium. The football team does. And the basketball teams, they don't have really passionate crowds. That is the most college-type atmosphere, like Big Ten college, hoorah, we love our team spirit type deal that we have with that university. I love going to the baseball games. You know how hard it is for me to watch baseball. I absolutely love sitting through. I wanted to sit through, too, but they were up against the NBA.
Double shit.
If we were watching ESPN right now and they were doing a big college World Series special, would nationally, is Miami thought, like, what are the 10 best college baseball towns in this country?
Nationally, Miami is very well respected.
I just don't know. Yeah.
National
no, Miami used to be, though. This is the
thing. Why Ray Lewis went to Miami.
This is the thing that Golden Kane, Mike Ryan, is trying to protect. He wanted to fire Gino DeMari today. Because
I don't want to do that. I'm not going to fire Gino DeMari. But you brought in a Dan Radakovich to take a look at the program. And if he decides keep Gino, we keep Gino. But there are a lot of people that know baseball way better than I that have their problems with Gino DeMari. It's complicated. His father did so many great things on the board of trustees for the program. This was a Blake James hire. It's a little bit more complicated. If Dan Radakovich thinks that there's an obvious upgrade out there, I trust the AD. If he thinks keep Gino DeMari for another season, see how this goes, go with that. It was a really bad look for this team to be the number two nationally ranked baseball team in the nation and to fail to get out of. They needed a comeback against Canisius. Otherwise, they would have been blanked in the regional they hosted. It's a really bad look.
It is. But to the larger point, Miami, there's a reason the Ron Frazier statue is a little bit larger than life. That guy was the wizard of college baseball. He was the biggest name in college baseball among coaches for decades. And
well, he helped build the sport. He helped put it on ESPN. And when you ask the question you're asking, Chris, Miami, he introduced Miami, its colors, to pieces of America that were learning what cable television was, and some people were watching college baseball.
But it's not a top 10 college baseball
town.
But
it was.
It's not Austin, Texas.
No, but it was.
It was.
Oh, they used to fill
that
place.
It was a long time ago. The late 90s. It was an electric atmosphere at Mark Light. Still is when they play FSU or Florida.
Right. It's the only place we have anything like that. We don't have anything like that. Those guys.
It's why there's so much cynicism behind me, because it seems impossible to believe.
I've been. I know it's a fun game to go to. Like, I understand what I just think you guys might be overstating a little bit when you say, like,
just
the whole
a little
town.
You guys do. You never talk about UM baseball.
Ever.
And now it's one of the most important.
I never talk about pro baseball. I afford me the opportunity to talk about college baseball when they're in the College World Series.
Yeah, but you're making it sound like Coral Gables was built on UM baseball. Like, it's the most important thing.
And it's more important than UM football.
Nine out of ten people down there, I guarantee you, have no idea who Ron Frazier is.
You're putting words in my mouth.
I think we just bring in Johnny Ruiz and fix this whole thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. JR.
He's had a week.
Penny stock now? He went from billionaire to penny stock?
Nope. Nice little rally. I hope you bought the dip, bro, because it's back over a dollar. So, $1.11. Suck on that, Ravel.
Does anyone understand what's going on with the economy?
It's a roller coaster.
So, is Ruiz a billionaire or is it penny stock? We don't know. Buy the dip.
I was talking about his son, Johnny, not John.
Oh, Johnny is a
real Canes baseball fans know he used to be on the team. Yeah.
Are we going to get back to Woody being a hypocrite about Dwayne Wade?
By the way, I also called the fake Howard. He's dealing with an office crisis right now, and he cannot
participate. Yeah.
Okay, so unfortunately, Morgan, we're going to just get stuck with Whittingham having to defend himself and Whittingham doing his fake J-Road Keach. So
can he defend himself?
Screw
doing
defending
the fake?
Himself. Yeah. Oh, yes. Combine them. Perfect.
Defend yourself doing J-Road Keach, whoever this is.
I don't think that this is fair. This is not a fair position to put Whittingham
you
in.
Know, this is actually a fairly ridiculous question because... So I had COVID recently, and I was talking, my friends and I do an impersonation of Jay Rokich on voice memo. And I said, I will not feel like I'm fully recovered from COVID until I can do this impersonation again. So this is the first time that I've given it a go since I've had COVID.
Oh.
So I feel like this is a big challenge, a big hurdle for my voice to clear.
How do you want to do this? Are you just going to...
I'll defend myself against the Dwayne Wade accusations as Jay Rokich. I think I can give that a go.
Wow.
Okay, and forgive me. For the people who are unfamiliar with stadium broadcasting voice, Mark Light Stadium at A-Rod Field. Now it's A-Rod's. A-Rod didn't go to school here, Field. Jay Rokich is a stadium announcer. Does he still put, because I haven't been there in a while, does he still
the biggest put thing in the Gables,
so. Sponsorships on the home runs?
Sure. For home runs?
There were so many sponsors because this was an NCAA event and not a Miami event that my wife turned to the speaker. I think she strained her neck screaming at the speaker, shut up.
Billy, what were you guys laughing
just
about?
Just two guts. Yeah.
I'm an asshole.
Stugatz, we understand that you are not here for the nostalgia of college baseball and Mark Light Stadium.
It just kind of made it. I don't know what it feels like.
They did build. None of the history that we just gave you is false.
We've talked about Mark Light Stadium before, but why would the audience...
It's not that it's false. It's that you guys don't care about it the way you're pretending that you do.
I don't. Okay. I agree with you. But what I'm saying is that when I worked at the University of Miami student radio station, we had people who would have a go at us for being overly critical of the players and then coach Jim Morris. Like, it was a really big deal. Like, it felt like I was kind of under a microscope as a 20-year-old broadcaster. I got pulled aside by one of the assistant ADs, like, hey, you got to put your better people in the baseball games. We're getting a lot of complaints. Like, it was a thing.
As did I. As did I, Billy. Like the time I'm trying. The reason I went to Whittingham with that is because when I walked on that field, that's the first program I covered. That Ron Frazier, the dude you're talking about, like sort of taught me how to cover baseball poorly. I didn't do it very well.
I had season tickets when I was little. It takes me back to a time. Danny Buxbaum and Alex Cora, really great team.
Gino DeMari played on the University of Miami teams and is now the coach of the University of Miami team. And do you have to care all the time to be pulled back into the stupid history of it?
Do I have to be talking about it on a podcast that no one wants to hear to be accused of caring about it? I don't talk about pro baseball.
It's notable to remember that UM baseball won the first major national championship at the university before football did. So there was a moment in time when UM baseball was a big, big thing.
You can argue, Stugatz, because that's the first trip I ever took on an expense account was to a UM baseball game. You can argue that Ron Frazier and that baseball program before Miami Vice on cable television, as people in Omaha didn't know, like people were not, cable television was just starting and the programming of sports things on television was just starting. And here's Miami baseball in these colorful uniforms. You can absolutely say that Ron Frazier had something to do in between Don Shula and everyone else who came down here with introducing a portion of Miami to the rest of the world.
And he literally saved UM baseball from extinction. That's not an exaggeration.
Old-timey college baseball talk introduces you now to Jay Rokich Stadium announcer defending Chris Whittingham's Dwayne Wade hypocrisies.
Ladies and gentlemen, I did not have a particular emotional connection to Dwayne Wade. When I was growing up as a sports fan, I really didn't feel the way about Dwayne Wade like I did about LeBron James.
You're back.
I guess you have to be there, but that is such a good impersonation.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's really good. Pretty good.
If you say so.
The problem with the impression is that nobody knows what we're talking about.
I mean, the Gables is going to love this hour.
This is why I wanted a J-Row Keach off, so they had something to compare Whittingham to, and I didn't think we could get the actual J-Row Keach on a moment's notice.
Miami had one of those things in their history. It's kind of like the Miracle on Ice. Everyone assumes that that's what won the gold medal game. I was under the impression that they won their first national title because of the hidden ball trick. It happened 3 years before
it was.
It was
a trick play. That's right. They pretended the bullpen. So wait, did that introduce a child Mike Ryan to sport? Ron Frazier calling the brilliant play of fake as if you've thrown it over the first baseman's head. Have your bullpen scatter as if the ball's down there and trick whoever they tricked into the hidden
Wichita
ball trick.
Wichita State. Did you guys know that?
The Shockers.
That in the College World Series, the Miami Hurricanes successfully pulled off a hidden ball trick. Yeah, it's great lore. There was a special about it on ACC Network.
But it was, right. Did it actually, it didn't win the game though at all, right? That's a myth.
No, but it was a year that they won the College World Series. They didn't play Wichita State in the final, I don't think so. Was that the same year that Raph Palmeiro and, was he on the same team as Will Clark? Man, I love college baseball, as you can tell, it's my passion.
The last time you cared about college baseball.
Will the thrill.
No, I go years without caring about college baseball to a degree. Truth, like I never made any sort of comparisons to football. I love the football program. I've seen a lot of bad football over the last 20 years. I still love those teams. But baseball, when they got a team worth paying attention to, I support that team with my dollars. You know, I donate to the school and their athletic department. I don't donate to one specific program anymore. That's not the way Golden Canes ride. So a rising tide lifts all boats. I'm there. I'll support anybody. I loved women's college basketball for a week over there when they made it to the ACC final. I want to see this program succeed. And that baseball program is truly one of the greatest in the nation. That regional final against Arizona. Arizona and Arizona State, they've won multiple national titles. Arizona has four. Miami has four. Miami's one of the top dogs in collegiate baseball. And if we're really being serious about how we're treating athletics, and it seems like the tide is turning, Miami basketball is getting name checked by Nick Saban. Miami basketball presently has two top 15 basketball players in the nation. Okay? So they're turning the tide a little bit. Miami baseball, this is a program that has four national titles. They should catch up.
Obnoxious Heat fan Mike, who does not settle for Kyle Lowry not being Dwayne Wade, has raised the standard at the University of Miami. Show me something, Gino DeMari. You've been called out by Mike Ryan, Golden Kane, who doesn't want to get into anything but has now just called you out in a 20-minute segment about UM baseball that no one in our national audience wants to hear starting the Big Suey.
No, no one wanted to hear Edmonton Oilers talk either, but I've been very passionate about that.
I wanted to hear it.
For various reasons.
One guy. Only Roy. Roy was like, finally, in the local hour, we're talking about the Edmonton Oilers.
We did it, everybody. We did it.
6 months, 82 games, and finally, the postseason is here. First up, the SoFi NBA play-in tournament. For this, the rules are simple. Win to get in. 8 teams battle to earn their playoff spot in a win-or-go-home style tournament that is bound to be full of highlights, excitement, and drama. There's no better way to set the tone for the playoffs than this, so make sure you don't miss the action. Watch TNT's coverage of the SoFi NBA play-in tournament on April 16th and 19th on TNT, True TV, and Max.
Don Lebatard.
I'm gonna get some golf ASMR.
Stugatz.
Oh, me.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
We're presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Dan for a special offer when you sign up. That's code Dan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
It's a super communal thing there, too, because Larinaga was just at the games and he was walking around, and he's always been really cool. Coker was like that, too, where he was very embedded in the Coral Gables community. Larinaga, you'll always see him at Sports Grill, and he's just walking around being a fan, supporting the other people. You recognize all the faces at Mark Light Stadium.
Yeah.
You're walking past all the players because they have to use the same bathroom as you, and it's a really cool small town. You park, you walk a half
NFL
block.
NFL has first transgender cheerleader.
I didn't like the way that was reported. because we really don't know if that's the NFL's first transgender cheerleader. Probability
I'm sorry,
is
but Colorado
probably not
in the Stanley Cup Finals.
He's not listening to you. He doesn't have his headset on, so he's having a conversation by himself. Yeah, we're talking to him.
I know, and I was going to, like, hey, listen to me, and then he started talking about Colorado. I was like,
go ahead, Mike.
Let's talk about Colorado. I don't think it's the NFL's first transgender cheerleader.
Well, that's what a story says.
No, I understand how it's being reported, but the probability is that it's not.
Okay.
It's announced as a first NFL transgender cheerleader.
Well, openly it says, you know, that's always the caveat.
Yeah, there's probably one right now on another team.
Yeah, no doubt.
Let's talk about the Colorado Avalanche.
I just can't imagine that being a draw for a Stanley Cup final.
Why? They got a great player in MacKinnon.
Right.
They got a lot of great players, but MacKinnon is a superstar.
Yeah, but it's not remotely a national team.
Did you see the trailer for, well, ESPN, I think ESPN has these finals, right, Chris?
Yes, sir.
So ESPN's got to try to put their storytelling behind it. Have you seen the trailer for the Red Wings Avalanche 30 for 30?
No.
Oh, my God. It looks incredible. If you remember how violent those games were in the 90s.
Better than Baltimore Ravens 30 for 30, baddest team of 2001, baddest.
They could do a 30 for 30 on the Steelers Ravens, and I'd be in on that violence. But if you remember the games between the Red Wings. And,
God, I can't wait.
It was assault.
I'm so excited.
There was assault on the ice.
It all started on one hit, Claude Lemieux.
All I know about Claude Lemieux. This is a great player, and what I know about Claude Lemieux is instigating that series, instigating what seemed like I was watching people fight on just skates, like it was just a brawl, and every once in a while a puck ended up in the net.
It was crazy. It was great. There were two goalie fights in the history of that little rivalry in the 90s. It was absolute insanity.
One of the things that I love that we're talking about. Red Wings Avs, and not to take it to the modern day, but it is pretty wild what Evander Kane went through this postseason. The season that he had.
God.
Alleged gambling connections within the sport, faking a COVID ID card.
The gambling accusations in an estranged relationship, right? Coming from either a wife or girlfriend who was had substantive credibility because she was very close to him.
Suspensions. A fake vaccination card ends up on Edmonton. Everybody in the sport wants to impose their own brand of justice on him, and he is there for it, and he is an agitator. It's like Draymond Green being accused of this kind of stuff because he is an agitator. He has dirty hits. He's willing to fight, and he was scoring at – he had 13 points throughout the playoffs. He had an unbelievable story that I wish actually ended up in the Stanley Cup final. It's not just because I think it would be great if Canada was in the final last year, too, having Montreal there. There's always that added juice.
Yes.
I'm with you. Colorado is a lesser story than Edmonton. But Colorado's a great team, man. They should have been there last year, and they found a way to barf up on the front of their sweater.
They were the cup favorite going into the Florida, even though Florida was number one.
They are still a heavy cup favorite. Right now, I think we'll use the Rangers. The Rangers are up 2-1 in their series before tonight's game 4 in Tampa. I've seen sportsbooks label the Colorado Avalanche as a -300 favorite over the prospective New York Rangers.
That's big.
It's way too much, especially in hockey when the Rangers would have the better goalie. Vasilevskiy would be the better goalie too, but that is way too much. But that is how overwhelming Colorado has been all season long. Their checking line scores goals. They are an unreal team, and now they're getting timely goaltending, which you need to win a cup. They got a lot of superstars, a lot of young names, not a lot of names that jump off the sheet. If you just started recently following hockey, these guys, in productivity, they are stars, but they don't have the name recognition, but they are overwhelming. They just took out Dreisaitl and Connor McDavid, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, I think Rangers and Edmonton would have been the ideal final of the Final Four for me. As a viewer.
Yeah. I kind of want, as much as there's a rivalry there, I want Tampa Bay. New York will be a cool story. And seeing MSG, those crowds are insane. But I kind of want to see a generational hockey team be dethroned on the grandest stage. I love that storyline. And seeing MacKinnon, who is a pleasure to watch, just watching him skate. He's up there. He's a better skater than Barkov. And Barkov's a beautiful skater. McDavid's a beautiful skater, too. But I would love to see the young guns of Colorado go at and topple the dynasty of Tampa Bay.
You sounded like Andrew Luck breaking down hockey.
It happens a lot.
He's a beautiful skater.
He is a beautiful skater. Put it on the polls. Nathan MacKinnon, a beautiful skater.
You mentioned the willingness or being here for villainy as part of the Edmonton storyline that you wanted, even though I'm not sure you guys are totally right about this. Yes, in Canada, it would be a huge story. For hockey, it would be a huge hockey story. But I don't know that Edmonton in America is more of a draw than Colorado is. Colorado is the franchise that has the more recent history, even as Edmonton has the Gretzky history and all of the hockey's best history.
Yeah, but I think if you've been willfully ignoring hockey, the name Connor McDavid might have come across your radar at some point. If someone asks you, name a current hockey player, and they go Crosby,
audience,
Ovechkin.
You think our David. Audience right now, you don't think Connor McDavid is like Mike Trout? You don't think our audience is saying of Connor McDavid, yeah, whatever.
I think he is like Mike Trout, and that's just hockey. But you still know the name Mike Trout. You probably know more Angels and Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout than you would know a really good baseball team. You know more of them than the St. Louis Cardinals, right?
Right.
I think Connor McDavid is absolutely a star that the league can market. They should honestly treat MacKinnon the same way, because MacKinnon is every bit the – well, not every bit. McDavid is McJesus for a reason, but MacKinnon is very good.
If I'm ESPN, I look forward to selling the idea that Canada, with Edmonton, Canada is going after its first Stanley Cup in 30 years. The team that invented hockey can't win a Stanley Cup, and now here's Edmonton with all its history. With Gretzky.
I think no matter what, they're going to be all right for the finals, because they're going to have a great story. Whether it's Tampa Bay going for three straight or New York, they absolutely killed it. Getting the Eastern Conference Finals in terms of their allocation order, they're going to have a good draw for TV. It didn't really matter. If you had the added juice of Edmonton, a recognizable franchise with the game's brightest star and the Canada thing, that would have been some extra juice. But Tampa Bay, especially in New York, if New York's in the final, they're going to do buku numbers.
You don't think there's Tampa Bay fatigue?
No, because I think we're talking about getting casual people over. The Stanley Cup Finals haven't been on ESPN in two decades. So if you're trying to get casuals over there, I think you draw them in with, hey, this is a team going for a three-peat. I don't think there's Tampa Bay fatigue, not even within the sport.
And I think the Edmonton thing is such a compelling, like, the fact that next year will be 30 years since a Canadian NHL team has won the Stanley Cup, that is compelling. It doesn't always manifest itself in ratings, because there are no local markets. Like, it doesn't count. They're watching on Sportsnet or TSN or wherever it is that they're watching up in Canada. But I find that really, when I watch Edmonton, or when you watch any hockey team and you feel the angst that a team from this country has not been able to win a Stanley Cup in 30 years. Never mind the individual angst within Maple Leafs fans, within Oilers fans, within Canadiens fans. It's so compelling to watch, because they obviously care about it way more than we do.
And I don't think there's been time to have Tampa Bay fatigue because of the COVID-shortened years and the delayed starts and the bubble. If they find a way to win their third consecutive Stanley Cup, they would have done so in about a year and a half, roughly a year and a half time span, because of the congested calendars of the sport. So while they've had three championships, they're doing this in such a tight window.
They microwaved it. They became a Tampa, of all places, became a hockey town in some ways, microwaved in a way that must make Canada envious. But you mentioned the Evander Kane story and leaning into the villainy. I don't know who the sports villains are now, but I did enjoy watching this morning. I think it was Get Up, and J.J. Redick and C.J. McCollum were standing with Mike Greenberg, and they have a matter-of-fact way of disrobing bad analysis. And I've seen this with Amin sometimes, when even we can get caught up in whatever the storyline of the moment is, because emotions carry the day in sports, and we like to talk about human drama. When you talk about public villainy, Draymond Green has chosen the lane of, I'm going to be a star by being a bumper car of conflict and behaving in a way that you really haven't seen an active player behave. I'm going to be a broadcaster while I segue into the next part of my career. And Greenberg was asking a lot of questions of Redick and McCollum about Draymond Green. And JJ cut through it with the most important parts of this series are Steph Curry over here, Steph Curry over here, Steph Curry over here. And Steph Curry is what you have to stop. And Greenberg was like, whoa, wait. And he's talking about the emotion of it and the fact that the Warriors are like, they win at an 80% clip when Draymond gets a technical and the emotions of it. And he's like, no, it's the clinical part. It's the science part. It's that Steph Curry's the best shooter ever from any range. And you have to do things in order to stop him. Draymond Green's just running around out there. That's a lot of noise. He's got a microphone. He might as well do the podcast while running around the court. Yeah. But Steph Curry's the problem there.
Yeah, and generally, the Warriors, when they're in the postseason, win at an 80% clip, regardless of whether Draymond is getting a technical or not. I made it a point to watch that segment with the sound on because I wanted to see the dynamic between CJ McCollum and JJ Redick out there, and I thought they were phenomenal. I don't know. The fact that JJ Redick was able to rat-a-tat-tat without a hiccup the three most effective plays that Golden State has, down from points to possession to here's what they average per pick and roll, here's what they average per handoff. It was a phenomenal bit of analysis. It was smooth, and I think the future of ESPN's basketball coverage is very bright, especially if it's centered around J.J. Redick and C.J. McCollum.
I cannot, as I was watching it, even recite for you the basketball language he was throwing at me with some fluency that was helpful to show, hey, Greenberg, you're talking about the wrong things. Like, when I say a disrobing, this is what Draymond is talking about when he says the way this is covered, the way the art of our sport, the science of our sport, the way that it's covered very poorly when you have generalists doing takes on the state of people's courage.
Yeah, but Greeny's doing the ESPN thing, and it's been a very successful thing. The ratings for Get Up are improving year over year. The ratings for First Take, when they embraced more debate and Stephen A. finally got a hold of the show that he wanted to do, have really improved. Greeny serves an essential purpose to ESPN's brand of storytelling, which is, oh, didn't you just want to get out of your seat and fight that guy?
I agree. Watch game three. Right. I agree. I don't want it all analytical. You know, it's great that J.J. Redick is like, well, they have this percentage on a short shot when this happens or off a screen or whatever. But you have to have the generalist as well,
the bigger picture guy. Let me ask you this. As I say yesterday, and Whittingham calls me on it, because Mike Ryan is giving you the numbers on takes. I'm saying I think the take is going the other way. I think that as we gas bags age, people will more and more see our unmasking or our disrobing, and Nick Wright will either tell you flatly, yes, I'm choosing this position, but I'm doing it most loudly just because I'm doing television. I'm in wrestling character. And Skip Bayless tries to stay young at 70 with this that he presents you with. And I think this is what Draymond is talking about when he says, man, the people covering this stuff and having the loudest opinions on it, as Kevin Durant yells at Stephen A. and Skip and Shannon by name, don't do it that way. Kevin Durant specifically, the guy who's been contaminated and is now acid and seems to hate superstardom, hate the media, fighting with everybody, hates the construct, says you're holding the game back. Skip Bayless puts out, the Lakers wanted Juwan Howard over Darvin Ham. Now that Quinn Snyder is available, did Lakers hire the right guy? And my question to you as you embrace debate culture is, do you believe that Skip Bayless has any idea whether Darvin Ham or Quinn Snyder, that he can break it down for you in a way that would make sense as to what the right hire would be? Do you have the confidence that the guy playing the professional wrestler on television has the information not fed to him by researchers and writers that he can construct the argument that is the most accurate argument instead of the most flammable argument?
No. But I'm not tuning in to Skip Bayless for that. I'm tuning in for the flammable conversation. I'm tuning in to see what kind of shot that he'll take at LeBron during his Darvin Ham breakdown, right, and why this is all LeBron's fault and why Quinn Snyder wouldn't want to go to that coach killer. That's what I'd go to Skip Bayless
for. Right. I also don't have faith that he could follow up with a great analysis of that coaching situation, but I also think that there's still a place in broadcast medium for somebody to just put the ball on the tee. Just throw the question out there. Throw the scenario out there. Did they do the right thing with Ham, who hardly anybody had ever heard of? Or should they have waited? Or should they go for him? Just put the ball on the tee and then let the arguing ensue.
Let the opinions and arguing ensue, no matter how informed or not informed they are. Okay, fine. Let's make that debate culture. Because I don't want to... I actually want to examine what I'm asking you, which is I'm clearly tired of some of this... The performance art of it. So yesterday,
when out of nowhere, John Wall is trending, and I can't legitimately figure out, well, is this because John Wall has so many fans or because Colin Cowherd has so few? Because John Wall is trending, and I've never seen him defended so much, because Colin Cowherd said John Wall has never made a teammate better. Now, he's been chasing John Wall with racial dog whistles for a while since he's been doing the Dougie. And this has been a part of the John Wall coverage, even as John Wall averages 9 assists a game. And like had people on the internet talking about Otto Porter and Marcin Gortat and how John Wall made them better yesterday.
You're applying the prism of when this story broke, right? Because Coward's audience is massive and has only grown since he's left. Shout out to him, because his audience is not small. I just want to make sure what you're saying, because it could be perceived as a shot. It wasn't a shot at Colin Cowherd's audience present day.
Oh, no. Wait a minute. What did I say there?
You said, is it because John Wall is such a big star, or is it because Colin Cowherd's audience is so small?
No, I didn't mean that. When I said or has so few fans, I meant that even in the people watching him, okay, there were no defenses of Colin Cowherd. What you saw happen was a vigorous defense of John Wall I had never seen that I was taking as a sort of rebuttal to Colin. You're still out here chasing Westbrook and John Wall about being selfish players, while now talking about how Draymond Green, who you're in business with, who's on the court now making his stardom, now he's the unselfish standard, the guy that you're in business with, versus John Wall, who you're still chasing around. And I'm watching the internet defend John Wall and now slander Otto Porter and Marcin Gortat because of all the people John Wall got paid.
Colin Cowherd is so good at this that I can't help but fall into some of the traps that he lays for me. He talks to his social media guys. He knows exactly how to boost subs on his YouTube page. But Colin Cowherd, for an aging star, I use that in air quotes, an aging star in this industry, I could certainly take some tips from him in how to build out a digital video audience and how to grow social, because dude has gotten the game down. You can say what you can point to our podcast metrics and say we're bigger, but you look at his video numbers, dude is doing something right. He has cracked the code. And it's because his takes may not be the greatest, but they're certainly thought out and they're delivered to a point that it makes you think. He's a provocateur.
The players,
yeah, agitation though, sells.
The players responding to it also helps. So John Wall calls him a clown, and that's all good for business. That discourse. And I keep coming in here, and I imagine the audience probably gets bored of this. I keep wondering, as this stuff evolves and it's all entertainment and we're all entitled to make fun of everybody, and it doesn't matter what's the most accurate, you're allowed to be discerning about whatever it is that you consume. The guys getting responded to are the old professional wrestlers. The guys John Wall is saying, this guy's a clown, they're the guys who have made the evolution in old age to, yeah, whatever, in Cowherd's case specifically, none of this matters. None of these words mean anything. Just come over here. Just come over and listen to what they're saying. And yes, please respond, John Wall. I would love for you to respond. I love to be in the middle of all of this.
Well, there's no room for nuance in anything, whether it be political debate or really sports debate at this point. You get sucked into, I got sucked into it with Steph Curry by just merely stating the fact that he hasn't won a Finals MVP. And my social media engagement was peaking last week just because I got sucked into that. These are quantifiable metrics that these talents have, that they're playing to it. It's calculated. It's calculated by Skip Bayless. He's a weird case study because he's also a psycho, because he genuinely believes the stuff that he is saying, and I don't understand it. He lives, breathes sports takedom. He thinks he's married to the game. He said as much. I'm married to the game. My wife comes second. That's an actual quote from Skip Bayless.
Ernestine. Yeah. Yes, she had to be insulted by that, but she understands what the Bayless racket is.
And Colin Cowherd is from this group, and I think Nick Wright is a good evolution on it, because Nick Wright uses the analytics, but he also knows how to do TV. Stephen A. is obviously the goat in it, and this is stuff that we can genuinely learn from. And I just wish Stu Gatz wasn't so transparent with it, because Stu Gatz is a great agitator. And if he actually watched or knew what he was talking about sometimes, I really think he could help us grow.
He could. If Stu Gatz had any interest in growing, his character would grow into somebody who is even more pantomiming, trying to just make the absurd take in order to get. But I think the credibility's been ruined there.
Well, we could certainly use more provocateurs on this show. And Dan is a provocateur, but he is also surrounded by a lot of people that agree with him. He's not challenged all that often. And if we had someone that truly believed in their bullshit, where it's just a game with two gods, I think that's where you see growth. Sadly, it's a sad state of affairs because I enjoy the nuanced conversation, but I see how other shows are growing, and man, I'm jealous. I'm envious.
I think the best take is the one that's both accurate and agitates as well. That's what I loved about you noting that Steph Curry has never won an NBA Finals MVP, because it implies more than it says. You're sort of implying there's a hole in his resume. Yeah, he's great. He's a super shooter, best ever, but
let me,
and that's a perfect take.
Let me ask you about this philosophically, though, Mike. If what you're saying about sports television coverage, and as we build a media company in the modern age, and as the political fight argues, go woke, go broke. My attitude, whether it's been at ESPN or anywhere else, when I'm arguing on behalf of just human decency, my political platform is don't be a total asshole. Like, I'm not actually a politician. I talk about race stuff. When that's the platform, and I'm out here saying, man, I don't want to argue with people. I would like some more people on here that we can have different conversations about it. But at this point in my career, I don't want to be out here arguing on the other side of whatever DeSantis is doing. Like, I don't want to bring on the other side to explain to me why it's okay for DeSantis to take out Tampa Bay Rays money because they dare to say, hey, we shouldn't have guns in our arenas. And that's something that works in today's America.
It's difficult to have a nuanced conversation where you occupy, say, the middle. What is even the middle nowadays? Because if someone is going to oppose some of what the right would deem a more progressive, I'm not going to use the W word there, a more progressive take on stuff, inherently, for them to be a part of that subgroup, they have to subscribe to all sorts of unctuous ways of living. And quite frankly, a lot of hatred. So it's hard for me to find someone that I'm willing to give a platform to that doesn't believe all this other garbage and actually have a spirited debate and maybe open our eyes to maybe some things that we didn't consider when it comes to gun control or gun reform. You're all in now on the political spectrum. You're all conservative. You have to cast away things that might give you reservations, and you have to go all in because it's such a tribalist thing right now. And it's the same with the left, because you'll get chewed up and spewed out by the left if you're not left enough right now. And we're having the Joe Rogan discourse.
Where everyone fights, Mike, my point is you're saying it will be rewarded. And I don't want to believe that's so, but I might be the idiot here. Because if you're saying that takes to the way to go, just let it fly. Just engage. Just throw it into the atmosphere and let social media fight over your words. Don't care about the words. Just throw it into the air in the name of the entertainment dollar. Oh. Just fight, even if it's inauthentically and insincere. If you're telling me that's what pays, that's not the game I want to play.
I know. And look, we're having a production meeting on the air right now, but I do think our show is kind of having a come to Jesus moment right now. As we look, we were very progressive when it came to digital audio and podcasts. We eschewed terrestrial radio, and we got married to our RSS feed, and we rode that way for 20 years. Well, now we're at a pivot point. And I still think that there's exponential growth when it comes to podcasts. More people are discovering that they can have a radio in their hands, and you're always going to have that base there grow. But we're approaching a plateau there a little bit. Where's the next place that we could grow? Digital video.
It's Lewis and Tony.
Digital video is obviously the place for growth. Well, have you seen our competitors in that space? Because we are not the juggernaut that we think that we are on pods. On pods, we are routinely number one. We are the biggest pod. But why are we the biggest pod? We've carried over subscribers for 20 years because we got married to that podcast. Digital audio is the future. So much so that we tail behind in digital video. And now we have 116 subs on our YouTube right now. When Pat McAfee's got over 1 million, he had a head start. What are we doing to grow there? What we need to do is take out LeBron James more, obviously.
That is what we have to do.
Because you would admit, he's a choker.
All right,
in the finals.
Well,
Jordan never lost in the finals.
All right, well, teach me how to do it. If this is the path I have to choose in behalf of the company, if this is the hill that I need to die on after getting suspended for putting up billboards in Akron and being told, I can tell some good stories there. I can really tell some good stories.
No, don't be the aging show that talks about the glory days of the past.
Okay.
These are your glory days.
All right.
And right now,
well, it doesn't sound like it, though. It sounds like our glory days are dwindling because going out in a pandemic is hard, and the video department hasn't gotten where we need it because we're doing it on our own.
Dan, I think the moral of the story here is, how do you go to Darvin Ham, who's never been a head coach of any team, he's just been an assistant, and you drop him into this locker room with LeBron James? You saw that chewed up and spit Frank Vogel out. You could have played the waiting game. Everybody knew Quinn Snyder was on his way out, but you just had to do something. Ultimately, I think this is a bad move, and Quinn Snyder probably had that option available to him, and he decided, I'm not going to go to that coach killer, LeBron James. I'll just see what the lay of the land is a year from now, because I'm a hot commodity. Everyone will know all the good stuff that I did at Utah, and I don't have to sign up for a sinking ship in Los Angeles.
An aging LeBron?
Yeah, Darvin Ham will be lucky if he makes it through the entire season.
All right, I'm going to try it without context. Are you ready? I'm going to try it. I'm not good at this. This is what the world needs to know. It is tied in the roots of everything that happened here in Miami, where he was taught to be a champion. But there is not a coach in the land who wants to work with LeBron James, who is a known coward and quitter.